Welcome to the Thriving Birth Worker Podcast, a space for conversations about how you, the birth worker, can create not only a fulfilling and sustainable career, but a joyful and thriving life. I'm Erin Underwood, an educator, movement specialist, mother of four boys, and a total anatomy nerd. My passion is to see birth workers encouraged, supported, and empowered in their careers and life.
Hello, I'm your host, Erin, and welcome to the podcast. Today, I get the privilege of chatting with midwife Mira Nirenberg from Portland, Oregon. I love this conversation as we got super honest and real about midwifery, motherhood, and the on-call life, the importance of community and empowered birth. Stories shape, educate, and empower us, and Mira's is no different. Mira Nirenberg started attending births as a labor doula in 2006 while she started her formal midwifery education at Birthing Way College of Midwifery. During midwifery school, she started working at Alma Midwifery as a postpartum doula and office staff. She completed her apprenticeship and after graduating from Birthway with a Bachelor's of Science in Midwifery in 2010, she continued working as a midwife at Alma, where she was fortunate to be part of so many wonderful family stories. In the fall of 2014, she decided it was time to start her own midwifery business to offer families in Portland a small, compassionate home birth practice. She has collaborated with her community, and Portland Natural Birth Midwifery was brought to fruition. And so without further ado, here is our conversation. Hello. How are you doing today, Mira?
I'm well. How are you?
I am good. I'm really excited for this conversation.
Me too.
So for my listeners who haven't heard of you, can you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, where you're located?
Yeah. So I am a home birth midwife, practice in the Portland area. And I have an office on Russell and MLK. It's a sweet little space above the coffee shop there. And yeah, I've been a midwife. So I've been practicing since 2006, 2007. And
That's awesome. Can you tell us a little bit about what brought you to midwifery, like a little bit of your starting journey?
Sure. Yeah. It was one of those things that I always knew that I would do something in women's health. I was born in the Baltimore Birth Center when it first opened up. And, you know, every year my mother always told me my birth stories, which included graphic birth pictures. And I kind of just thought that was normal until I remember bringing in, I think we did a little bio when I was in fourth grade, and I brought in pictures of my birth, and my teacher like quickly shut that down and was like, this is not appropriate. And I realized at that point, like, oh, not everyone thinks that birth is natural and normal. So that kind of shaped me wanting to know more about how our society sees birth and what we can do to, you know, keep it normal and natural. And in college, I studied women's studies with kind of an international focus, but realized that I really just wanted to work with birthing families. So I thought, you know, I'm not sure if the medical aspect was for me. So I became a doula and I moved to Portland, Oregon. And then I realized that the dueling, while I loved supporting birthing families, was not the end of the road for me. I realized that I really did want to be that care provider for birthing families and provide access to home births for anyone who was low risk and wanted to try that out. So I went to Birthing Way College of Midwifery, which is in Portland on Foster Road. And I went through that really quickly. I did 3 years of the academics. And then while I was in school, I also worked at one of the birth centers and apprenticed there. And got my feet wet with attending home births and birth center births, and then graduated and became a certified professional midwife in 2010, just a month before I had my own little one.
Oh, wow.
And so that was, you know, I continued midwifing through having my own kiddos. And my journey changed, of course, as it always does when you become a parent yourself. I had two home births. My daughter loves to tell whenever someone comes to our house, she's always like, this is where I was born. And this is where I watched my brother being born. But having two home births myself really just validated the need for home birth midwives. You know, it was one of those things that I thought and really felt that how we worked with birthing people and birthing families was really the way that I wanted to work with them. But once I was on the other side, I was like, yes, like this is why we do the work we do. It made me go into parenting so much stronger and sure of myself, which is really just what I want for all of my families and the reason why I do this.
That's awesome. So what does your practice look like now? Because you said you journeyed in, you got into midwifery, which I'm going to dig into this in a minute as far as this whole everything sounds like transitioned in your life as far as you were certified and then you had your own child. So that sounds huge. But for right now, you have your own practice, or are you working? Are you on your own there?
No. So I opened this. I opened my practice when my son, who's now six, was a year old, and I started mostly on my own and just used assistance from the birthing community. But recently, I brought on Jamie, who is wonderful. She apprenticed with me for a couple births. And so she's come on as my partner. So there's two of us now. We still provide full continuity of care and see all of our clients for prenatal appointments and both attend the births. But it just gives, you know, it's like two heads are better than one. You know, there's always someone who can answer a phone call. There's always, you know, just making sure that if one of us is out of town, that there's still that full continuity of care for our clients.
That's got to be so nice as far as the on-call aspect and just having, like, just knowing, like, if there was ever an emergency, like, there's backup.
Exactly. And there's always, of course, I always have had backup, you know, with community midwives. But it's nice that this way, our clients know both of us right from the beginning. They interview with both of us. And they know, you know, that's like such a big part of our care is that our clients hire us and they know who will be at their birth. And if for some reason one of us does have a planned vacation time, then they still know 2/3 of the team. We work with an apprentice as well who comes to all of our appointments. So it really is that full continuity of care because, you know, as you know, too, it makes such a difference when you're in your own birthing environment and the people that are there, you know, and trust.
Yeah, it's really crazy to me. And part of the reason I'm so excited about working with birth workers is because of the impact they had on my own life. And I've had 4 births, 2 in the hospital, 2 at home. And when I think back at the birthing experience, obviously I think of my baby and I think of my partner, but then like the next faces in my mind are my birth workers and the people who are right there holding my hand and cheering me on and coaching me through it. And they just made such a powerful impact on that experience for me. And I had some really amazing support and it was just, it changes everything when you have that support and that connection with those people.
Definitely. And that's really, that's why I do this. You know, I always tease, I love little babies, but really it's about the birthing families just having that support and knowing that there's options and knowing that they are always in control and that they get to choose what is going on for their families, for their birth. And, you know, you can't always say that that happens elsewhere.
Yes. That's awesome. So let me rephrase that question. So let's talk about for just a second. You talked about midwifery and how you like transitioned into what midwifery full-time on your own, getting certified and then became a mom all at the same time. So did you feel like having your own birth shifted your perspective at all of how you provide care for your clients, or did it more just solidify what you already believed, or a little bit of both?
Yeah, a little bit of both, definitely. I mean, it solidified that I was doing the right work, you know, that kind of what I said of like, I knew that it was really important to me as a birthing person that there were people there that I knew and trusted and that I could look at them and know that everything was okay, right? And I also knew then as the client that the things that we were saying as midwives were true. You know, yeah. You kind of like get this, you go through school and you attend a lot of births. I attended, I think, about 100 before I had my own kiddo. And not having done it myself, you know, through those first 100 births, I was like, you know, it seems like what I say is correct. And, you know, the suggestions seem to be working, but that part is really validating to be on the other side. Yes, like this makes a big difference and this works. So that was validating as well to know that the care that we give is really good care. And it just really furthered my desire to work with more people who wanted home births and who wanted this experience of just being in charge of their own care.
That's awesome. So you talked about how you maintained your midwifery practice through the tiny years with your kids. So can we talk about just a little bit of the nuts and bolts, the practical side, the emotional side? Like, how did you juggle that? Because I know a lot of birth workers that can be a lot. It can be a lot with the whole on-call, the babysitting, the juggling, the whole thing. So just want to hear about your experience there.
Yeah, the lifestyle is hard without kids, for sure. You know, I mean, it's hard being on call 24/7. And that's really, if I have just even one client due, that means that I'm on call from 36 weeks to potentially 43 weeks around her due date. That means that I don't go hiking if I don't have cell phone reception and I'm far away. You know, I mean, it means that I don't go to the beach. So then when you add kids to that, that makes, you know, it's a whole nother beast. Thankfully, I do have a partner that's very supportive and he is self-employed. And so that has made a world of a difference for us. Where, you know, I mean, he knows that he's also on call, which is, of course, different before and after kids. So when I was pregnant and when I first had my daughter, who's my 9.5-year-old, I was lucky enough that I was working with other people at a birth center and went back to births in her first year. And both of my kids were able to come to work with me for prenatal appointments. So that was really nice. But then for births, it meant that I had to leave, you know, my little baby, who often cried, of course. My husband always joked, he was like, you wanted to do attachment parenting and night nursing, but then you leave me with this child who can't night nurse. So he definitely did a lot of driving in the middle of the night to try to get our daughter back to sleep when I was at birth. And sometimes if it worked out, he would swing by a house and I would nurse her, you know, in a different room if we needed to. You know, it was just, it was a lot of sleep deprivation. Mm-hmm. it meant me being up all night and pumping at birth and then coming home to a very tired husband and a very sad baby who wanted all of my attention. And so I didn't get to nap after births. I would just have to, you know, make it through the whole next day. Mm. And that was hard. I amazingly do okay with sleep deprivation. So I was lucky that I didn't go through any postpartum mood disorders myself. So I was able to get through that hard part with a baby and being up, you know, during the nights for midwifery. So I feel, you know, other people's stories might be different if they were going through some harder times postpartum. But that part was okay. You know, it just meant more sleepless nights. and then as, you know, as my kids got older, I continued working. As my daughter got older, I continued working at the birth center. And then when my son was a year, that's when I was like, you know what? I worked a lot with my daughter, and I was ready to open my own small home birth practice, you know, for multiple reasons. And one of those was for family life. You know, I was doing a lot of births every month at the birth center. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to slow down. I wanted to tell my family that I was only going to be gone maybe two nights out of the month, you know, doing two births or so a month. And that was definitely a welcome change in our family. As my kids got older, it means, you know, we just have really tight, we have a tight community, and we really do rely a lot on our friends. We don't have family in Portland. So it means that, you know, oftentimes we're calling up our friends and asking them if our kids can go hang out with them while I'm at a birth, or if my husband goes out of town, it means that, you know, either I ask my mother-in-law to come in town for the weekend, or, you know, I set up sleepovers for my kids if I'm on call. So there's a lot of juggling for sure. But, you know, I mean, sure, you know, my daughter sometimes, especially around any holidays or her birthday, she gets worried that I'll miss something. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I do. You know, and she remembers. she remembers the New Year's Eve that I wasn't there. but she also knows how important this work is. And, you know, I'm hopeful showing my children that birth is normal and that my daughter knows the proper anatomy and knows how a baby is born and all of those things make up for the time that potentially I'm not home.
Well, I also love just bringing this conversation to the forefront, because it just, birth and parenting is such a community sport, so to speak. Like, mm-hmm. we are not designed to do it on our own. And yet culturally, it's so pushed to that direction of one or two parents are supposed to be everything and juggle all the things for our children. And yet, you know, hearing your story, and you think about even just the birthing mother, she needs this community. And then there's this other layer of the birth workers need this community. And so mm-hmm. it's not just an interaction between a midwife and the birthing person. It's an interaction between two separate communities who are supporting each other to make this moment happen. And I think that's really Definitely. Powerful when you zoom out and you think of how many people are in play to support this moment and mm-hmm. to help facilitate this actually being able to happen. And when you look at culturally, outside of our culture, historically, obviously that was the norm. Like, everyone would pitch in and everyone would be a part, and someone would bring food to this person and someone would grab the kids and just take care of them and make it happen. And that's become right. something that is not as natural to our culture to do that. And so I think it's such a powerful thing. And I think it's such an awesome reminder too, because I think sometimes we do get sucked into, like, how do I make this happen? How do I mm-hmm. make sure that I can be the midwife or be the birth worker and be the mother or be the whatever it is that our roles are. We see all these different roles and we think, how do I do it all? And whenever I talk to someone who's been doing it successfully, like you hear, I'm going to talk about my partner. Like I'm talking about my friends. I'm talking about my parents. Like I'm talking about the community around me, that it's not you doing it all on your own. So I think that's such a powerful reminder and visual. And I just love your story in that way, because it isn't, when you're in that birthing room, it's not just you there. I mean, you're the only one physically there, but you have like this whole tribe of people around you, this whole community of people around you who are helping facilitate that.
Definitely. And it's important. And it's important to, especially like you said, in our culture where we really have lost a lot of that community. I mean, we talk about this for the birthing families too. Like, what is your postpartum? What's your postpartum plan? You know, like, how can you bring your community to help you then? Because it would be miserable and really hard to raise children alone, right? I mean, if we didn't have all of these friends and family and resources. And I think that completely starts at birth.
Oh,
yeah,
absolutely. And even before birth, if it's like you have other kids and yeah, the whole mm-hmm. thing. So that's awesome. So something that we've talked about is, and something you get real excited about, you're passionate about, is empowered birth. So I was wondering mm-hmm. if you could start by defining what you mean by empowered birth, and then we can just dialogue about that for a minute.
Yeah. You know, I think empowered and empowerment sometimes has, you know, different connotations associated with it. And really for me, it's all about the birthing person being in charge of themselves, right? It's about choice. It's about that they know their options, that they have all of the education that they need to make these big choices, sometimes big, sometimes little, you know. But mostly these are big choices and movements and decisions that they get to make. And the birthplace, while I'm a home birth midwife and I love home births, the birthplace isn't as important as how that person feels about their birth. And that is what I really see as an empowered birth, is that yeah, you know, we don't have, not everyone ends up having a home birth if they started wanting a home birth. But if we end up in the hospital, did that person make those choices, right, along the way, from the time that they conceived until they've given birth and then they go on to parenting? Like, they get to choose what is done and what they're doing. And so for clients, you know, when we have to transport to the hospital, I let them know, like, yes, of course, the hospital will want you to do X, Y, Z, but you ultimately still get to say yes or no. And that is what is so important to me, is that clients know that, and that they feel educated, and that they empower themselves to then speak up for what they want and what they need and what is best for their family. Hopefully that ends with a home birth, right? But it's really just about that journey then, and about them having that choice.
Awesome. I love that definition. And yeah, I think culturally sometimes that word empowered, I don't know, can be overused, or it's just used for a lot of different things. And for it to be all about the autonomy of the client, for the birthing person to feel empowered to make their choices and to feel informed about their choices. I think part of the process is not just that they make the choice, but they have all the options laid out in front of them before they make that choice.
Exactly.
Because I think sometimes it's, you know, you have option A or option B, pick one, when in reality, there's a lot more than just two options of how this thing could, you know, what your choices are for next step.
Right. And that doesn't include a yes or no, right? I mean, I think a lot of times, you know, potentially the hospital will say, okay, you know, can I do this? And saying, and that's, that question is not an actual informed choice then, right? That's not giving the clients educated choice. It's talking about like, okay, here is what we are potentially worried about. And then these are different risk factors. These are, you know, pros and cons of doing all these different things. What are your questions, right? And like, what do you think would be best? That is more of the conversation we have all the time, you know, in our prenatal appointments. We present all of the different testing options and screening options that, you know, they would get at any OBGYN. But we talk about all of the education about it, and we talk about all of the different options that there are. And sometimes people make their own options even, right? But they get to choose that from conception to then, like I said, carrying on to parenting then. And that is what I feel like when people have this empowered birth story, they feel more in their body and capable than to parent. And that is really the birth itself, although hopefully wonderful, is really such a small part of their journey, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes people laugh. They're like, yeah, but you're a midwife. Like, that's what you do. You do birth. I was like, it's true. But the reason why I'm a midwife is for this greater journey, right? For people who feel like their bodies failed them or that they didn't have any choice, then how does that resonate for them while they go forward as a parent? And so that is really, you know, why I love it. And this also, my own journey as a parent, I see this, right? Like I feel capable in my own body, and that helps me parent better and feel like I can navigate the world a little bit easier as a parent then, because I was able to, you know, really choose how I gave birth and felt like it was a good birth experience. And so I want that for my clients.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important what you said, as far as, I want to reiterate it, that empowered birth doesn't mean that you get the perfect outcome. Like, you may, mm-hmm. you map out your perfect ideal birth plan, and everything happened exactly the way you wanted it to. And I think that sometimes can become the goal for, I mean, a lot of moms, obviously, birthing individuals, like, you have a plan, you have your ideals, and it's really good to have thought about it and know what your options are. And then when the body doesn't respond exactly according mm-hmm. to plan, or the baby, or, you know, all the little contingencies that are involved in birth, then it's easy to just feel like, oh, I didn't have an empowered birth. I didn't have the outcome that I wanted. And to shift that focus onto, you get to make the choices based off of what is presented to you. And mm-hmm. so really being intentional with our vocabulary in how we empower our clients, because I think sometimes if the focus becomes too fixated on a quote unquote optimal outcome, which obviously we want healthy baby, healthy parents. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, if we don't get, you know, because it's so easy, I think, sometimes to get fixated on like, okay, I'm not going to have any intervention. And then you have like this tiniest bit of intervention, and then it can really get into your psyche of, especially as I remember my first two were in a hospital, and my second son was induced because he kept flipping head up, head down every other week. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he was a big baby. He was like born 8.5 pounds. Yeah. Like the my OB, flipping. Like every, yeah. My, like at 39 weeks, he's still flipping. Mm-hmm. And my OB, I remember him looking at me like, he's too big to do this. And I'm like, well, he's doing it. So,
right. So what are we
going to
do?
So once he was head down, they were like, well, you know, these are options. We could induce because he seems to like to flip. They're like, you know, they're like, uh-huh. we can't tell you what he's going to do, but you know, he is, you know, head down right now. And so these are your mm-hmm. options. I can't guarantee next week he won't be
right.
flipped in some other direction. And so I was able to make that choice, but it almost felt like a lose-lose situation. Like, oh, it's not my ideal. This isn't my ideal. What am I going to do? And to be encouraged to like, you're making an empowered choice, like, because these are your options and you're making the choice that feels right to you. So I think it's really powerful.
Exactly. And that's what it is, right? It's like, what, there's no such thing as a perfect birth. There's, I mean, yes, a lot of people will look back and say, that was what I wanted. But we don't know exactly how any birth will go, right? Even for someone who's had a beautiful, straightforward first birth, we don't know how the second birth will go, right? Or any subsequent births thereafter. So it's really just about, yeah, changing that perspective of like, for you, you made that choice, which was the best in that case, right? You know, you gave yourself then the best option for having a vaginal birth then, because your baby was head down at that moment. We never know what's going to happen, you know, in an hour or in a week. And so it's really about taking what we know in that time and then making that choice, right? That seems the best for that family. And I always come back to parenting, like that is parenting, right? Like we try to, who knows how our kids will turn out, but like in the moment, I try to make the best choice for my family with what's presented at that moment, right? Like I don't have a crystal ball. And it's the same thing with birth. You know, even for my own births, I wouldn't say that they were, you know, really easy. They definitely were not easy. And, you know, there were things that happened that I was surprised about. But in the end, I look back and say, yes, like I chose to be at home and I chose those birthing positions. You know, I asked my midwives to do things that I didn't think I would ask them to do before I gave birth. but I chose those things and my babies were both born healthy and at home. And that is what I had wanted. So yeah, I mean, I always, you know, they were hard, but that's okay. Right. Because how I feel about it and how that brought me into parenting was what I had hoped for.
Yeah. So as we're talking, I'm hearing a lot about, as birth workers, a large portion of empowered birthing, like allow, you know, presenting that to our clients really centers around language and how we communicate and word choices. And so I think sometimes that can be a little sticky in a situation that feels like there's a time crunch, like this, mm-hmm. a decision needs to be made very quickly. Do you have like a little checklist or like things that you make sure that you do in communicating under pressure where you don't have necessarily 20 minutes to slowly right. explain all the options and to make sure, you know, to really have a long dialogue when you're like, okay, I need to condense this conversation. And, mm-hmm. but I also want to communicate in a way that is very clear and it leaves them feeling like they have a clear, you know, understanding of what's going on and so that they can make a clear choice. Like, do you have any tools that you use?
Yeah. You know, part of that is really building our relationship-based care prior to the birth, right? I mean, we spend an hour with all of our clients at every prenatal visit. And part of that, you know, taking vitals takes all of 10 minutes. but really a big part of being a midwife to these clients with continuity of care and that relationship-based, where we are working on that trust. And so that means, and I talk about this in the interview, and I talk about this every time we talk about, you know, we'll talk about transports throughout their care. So it's something that they, you know, it's always a possibility, of course. And so I want my clients to know, so it's never a surprise all of a sudden. And so building on that trust and that communication throughout their care, then if we get to a point in the birth where something comes up that's an emergency, then of course, you know, we're not going to delay any medical care to talk for an hour about informed choice. But what it means is that, and I always tell my clients this, I will always look at them, always look them in the eye and tell them what I'm worried about and tell them, and, you know, I make suggestions, of course. I mean, informed choice, clients always get to choose, but it also there, you know, is some room for, you know, my medical opinion then as well. And so in those emergencies, you know, looking at clients, bringing in partners, there's partners, and really letting them know what I'm worried about, what I, you know, would recommend, and finding out where they are, what's going on, and telling them all of these different options. Then, you know, sometimes even in emergencies, there's different options, of course. And so I never make the call without the clients saying, you know, asking the questions. Usually they get the sense when it's an emergent problem as well, right? So it's usually pretty quick, their questions. So within a couple of minutes, we've had what potentially would be a lengthy discussion in a non-emergency. You know, we've had that full discussion within 2 minutes. And when, you know, when emergencies come up, clients, you know, usually feel like they're able to make a call based on our discussion pretty quickly. You know, I mean, if it's a true emergency, usually there's not, people aren't choosing to then stay home and wait out something. So I think building that trust during their pregnancy really allows us to kind of, you know, come to their decision and a conclusion pretty quickly then, because we both trust each other and we have worked together for, you know, potentially many, many months already. So there's, you know, those times when even we can kind of just, it's a partnership, right? Like we can look at each other and we're like, okay, I am worried about something. Mm-hmm. And they get that sense of emergency then pretty quickly. You know, I am a very laid back kind of person. Mm-hmm. and usually at births, you'll find me, you know, kind of just quiet. And in emergencies, I stay very level headed and very grounded. And I don't yell or, my voice usually stays pretty level. But even within that, because we've worked together for so much, clients know. And so it's a very condensed conversation, but it's still long enough for them to get their answers, you know, or decide. There's still time for partners to talk, of course, or ask any questions that they have. And also a reason why I work, you know, with Jamie and an apprentice. And so I can have those hard conversations during an emergency still, but yet we're still taking care. You know, it's not like I stop doing the medical care then, right? Because there's three of us. So if a baby is not transitioning well, we're still providing care. Or if a mom is bleeding, we're still providing care while I'm able to have that conversation.
Right. And I think what you said, it just really summarizes it really well as far as just looking someone in the eye and having real, raw, honest conversation. Because there's a few times in some of my births where I could feel something was going on. You can see the looks on your provider's faces. They're kind of doing the side eye, like nonverbal communication. And I'm like, what's going on? Because I know something's mm-hmm. up. And like what I just needed was like, just be straight with me. Like, just tell me what's going on, get straight to the point, and then we can, you know, have a conversation from there. And I think that's just really honoring to our clients to be able to just be straightforward to the point with compassion, but just mm-hmm. being like, not feeling the need, like we need to shelter our clients or like we need to decide what they know or what they don't know. And I think that is a big piece of that empowered birth is like, we don't get to decide or filter, you know, I mean, to an extent, obviously you're not going to like start naming off anatomical terms that aren't helpful in that moment. So there's a certain level of filtering, but just being really aware of why am I making these choices and, you know, being, you know, using wisdom in that.
Yeah. And there's no part, I don't feel the need to be over someone, right? I mean, I work with other adults just because I have this medical knowledge doesn't mean that I'm going to hold that from anyone, of course, right? So it's like there's no reason at all to withhold information from a client. So if something's happening, I will tell them right away what I'm worried about. Because yeah, there's no reason to be held over, right? I mean, that is a big part of midwifery, is that our clients are clients. They're not patients. They're not, even in emergencies, they're not sick. They are coming to the table as adults wanting to have, you know, to decide their own care. And so if I withhold things, then I'm taking things away from them. And that's not at all, of course, my way of practicing. So it is really important that, I don't mince my words when I'm talking to a client about, especially in an emergency. Like, it's a quick conversation, but I really do let them know everything that's on the table.
That's awesome. So as we're wrapping up here, is there anything you would want to share? Any kind of bits of, it could be an encouragement or a reminder of, just to the general birth worker population, like anything that you, any tools, anything you'd want to share before we wrap up here?
To other?
Yes, to other birth workers.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, I think burnout is real, right? I'm actually listening right now to a book about burnout. And I think for me, I don't feel close to burnout at all right now. And, for me, it's really just remembering, like, when I get up in the middle of the night, it's like, why mm-hmm. we're doing this. And I think that's really easy to say, but, to really taking time when we feel, you know, inconvenienced by clients, because in reality, of course we do, you know, I mean, just for Thanksgiving, I had to step away from the Thanksgiving table to take a client's phone call, mm-hmm. right? And so those are the realities of being a midwife and other birth workers. But remembering then, just like that, you know, gratitude, I know that's kind of the season, but just, you know, I really do. I love this work. And so remembering why I do it on a regular basis helps me get through those sleepless nights or having to, you know, figure out the fax machine while I'm on vacation. Cause that happens a lot. And just telling my community again and my kids why I do this and why it's so important to me, to continue this work, because the reality is if I didn't have that, right? If I didn't remember why I do this work, then it's easy to become bitter about all of those inconveniences. So I just try to stay grounded with really that truth of why I do this. And it's so far has kept me out of the burnout range. Cause it's important work. And sometimes I get worried, like, oh, is this, Are all of the good birth workers going to get burnt out before we have more, mm-hmm. you know? And it's important to me that this work continues from, you know, I love working with doulas, and I love having my community midwives to bounce ideas off or peer review or hold each other accountable. So I think it's important that we really do just stick together and continually reassess if it still works for certain people, of course, this lifestyle, but just keep in mind really like that big picture of why we're doing
it. That's good. Yep. Remembering your why and gratitude. That's a really mm-hmm. awesome place to end, I think, this conversation. I think it summarizes things really well. So if people want to find you, are you on social media? Do you have a website?
All of it. I think you kind of have exactly. to in this day and age. Yeah, our website is portlandnaturalbirth.com. and under the same name for Facebook and Instagram. I'm trying to get on more Instagram stories. So if people have questions, they can certainly ask them there or send me an email at midwives@portlandnaturalbirth.com.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Mary, and for sharing your wisdom today.
Thank you for doing this. This was fun.
Isn't she awesome? I love hearing people's stories and journeys into birth work. And I also love hearing from people who have been in the field for a while and just soaking up their wisdom. This conversation ticked all those boxes for me. Mir and I chatted both on the call and off about the demands that birth work puts on our bodies. I'd like to invite you to download my 4 Simple Shifts for Back Strength guide. This guide outlines some really practical shifts you can make today to start experiencing less pain and to build more strength in your back as you serve your clients. You can find this and all of today's show notes at thrivingbirthworker.com and just click the podcast tab. If you're enjoying these conversations, be sure to take 10 seconds to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast so you don't miss a single episode. Thank you so much for listening today. Thank you for your powerful service to this community, and thank you for just being you. I'm excited to connect with you again next week on the Thriving Birth Worker podcast. Have an awesome week. The information and discussion provided on this podcast are not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. If you have a medical concern, you should consult with an appropriately licensed physician or healthcare provider.